It's Stanley Cup playoffs, and the hockey season for the Wild's over, but we're delighted to be able to talk with the guy who has spent decades documenting and preserving the history of hockey. Roger Godin is the team curator of the Minnesota Wild, and before that, he was director and curator of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame in Eveleth, Minnesota. He's written numerous books and articles about hockey and other sports. Joins us now by phone. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Roger Godin.
Well, thank you. It's great to talk to the people up there on the North Shore. I've been in Grand Marais, and it's a great little spot.
Oh, thank you, Roger. Well, I've been in the XL Energy Center, and it has its own charm. I know you welcomed our very own Matthew Brown into the press box a month or so ago, and we appreciate all the access we've had to the Wild this season. But, Roger, let's see. Should we start with what happened to the Wild, or should we talk about you a little bit?
I'll let you make that decision.
I'm interested in you, sir. How did you find yourself to be curator of the Minnesota Wild?
Well, that grew out of having been the first director of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame at Eveleth, which you mentioned in the intro. I started there actually in July of 1971, which was 2 years before we actually had the building, and we opened to the public on June 21st of 1973. And so I was in that position then through 1987, August of 87, minus about 15 months when I left and worked in a museum in Texas and then came back to Eveleth and then wound up leaving again. So altogether, I had about 14 years there and would have preferred to have stayed there under ideal circumstances, but things weren't ideal, so I had to find another way of making a living, and I was able to get with the U.S. Army museum system, and basically that's who I was with in the late 80s and all through the 90s, first at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, for communications and electronics, and then the Ordnance Museum at Aberdeen Proving Ground after that, and that was the bulk of the time. And then I came back to Minnesota in June of 99 with the hope that I would be able to get with the Wild because I had been made aware that they were interested in tapping in to the history of the sport in the state. Unlike the North Stars, who never really, did that. And so I thought it would be good to position myself for that possibility. And so I came back, and it fell into place nicely. So I began with the Wild in February of 2000.
Nice. And is it true you're truly unique and the only NHL team that has a curator?
That is true to my knowledge up to this point in time. The Blackhawks have a team historian, a guy named Bob Verdi, and he's a longtime newspaper guy. But to my knowledge, he does not do museum exhibits. And then Montreal has a gentleman who is an archivist, I would say, and again, I don't believe he actually creates any new exhibits, although I'm not totally clear on that. But I think from the context of exactly what I do, there may not be anybody else up to this point in time in the NHL.
Oh, perfect lead-in, Roger, as I was wondering what it is you do.
It's primarily maintaining and updating and creating new exhibits for what we call the State of Hockey Tribute, which consists of about 40-odd exhibits on the four levels of the building relating to the sport in the state. That's the prime function, and I'm in the process of working on what we might be doing in the year ahead. And then as an adjunct to that, of course, if our team does a particular noteworthy thing and there's an artifact involved with that, then that's desirable for me to get a hold of it. I've got Nick Schultz's stick, who has played more games with us than, you know, anybody else. And Marion Gabrick's jersey and a number of other jerseys, but I do have his jersey for his team when he was back in Europe. That's another aspect of it. And I do occasional writing for the program and website, although it's not on any regular assigned basis.
Sure. No, I've seen your displays at the X. They're really, really nice. And a lot of history there, a lot of history. And you mentioned the state of hockey. How long has Minnesota been known as such?
Well, that is a concept that evolved out of the Wild being awarded an NHL franchise, which occurred in June of 1997. Sometime between there and when we began play in meeting with a public relations agency out of New York, our then marketing people, principally Matt Maka, who is now our chief operating officer, but back in those days was the marketing guy. That state of hockey concept came out of that agency. I think it's interesting that people who are not from Minnesota can look at Minnesota's situation and see possibilities for concepts that the natives do not. You know, it's same along the lines of the research and writing I've done. No one had really seriously looked at Minnesota's hockey history in any great depth in terms of creating book or books on aspects of it, and I've done too. And I'm from New York State originally, so you know, you ask yourself, why didn't some Minnesotan do this, you know, before I got here? So it's just one of those quirks of life, I guess.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple books out there you've authored, and those would be Before the Stars, Early Major League Hockey and the St. Paul Athletic Club Team, as well as Red, White, and Blue on Ice, Minnesota's Elite Teams and Players of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And so maybe just take us back a few decades more than to some of those early amateur teams. And what the St. Paul Athletic Club team, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Even going back a little bit further than that, our first recorded game in the state that is in which there's some substantial written evidence of occurs in February of 1895 over near Target Field, where the University of Minnesota hosted the Winnipeg Victorious. And that's obviously of considerable importance in recording the sports role in the sports history of the state. But it's also interesting from the concept or context of this, British Columbia, which is most likely the last Canadian province to come online in terms of a recorded game, well, it only occurs like a month before we do, in January of 1895. So we go back that far. And then everything else evolves from that. So there's organized league competition in the first decade of the 1900s, and then out of that comes the St. Paul Athletic Club team, which joins the American Amateur Hockey League in 1914-15, and then has a history that goes through 1926. And what I would term the amateur era, the major league amateur era, because we don't have professional hockey on any ongoing basis, i.e. through the NHL until 1924. But we did have, I would argue, major league hockey, and we had it through something called the United States Amateur Hockey Association, which comes along in 1920. Now, the athletic club had played earlier than that in in another league called the American Amateur Hockey League, and they won the McNaughton Cup a couple of times, 1916 and 1920. And then when the league structure changes and the United States organization takes place, that is really a major league, because it was divided into three divisions, and it was national in scope, and it had about a five-year run. And St. Paul were national runners-up through that league in 1922 and in 1923. And then what happened was that pro hockey through the NHL came into the U.S. starting in with Boston in 1924. And, of course, that proved to be the death knell of the formalized, technically amateur hockey that was then being played by St. Paul. And so in St. Paul, we had a minor league team develop out of the athletic club, the Saints, and they play in the American Hockey Association, which starts play in 1926, and they go all the way to 42, and I don't want to get too much beyond that. So essentially summarizing, we had major league amateur hockey through the athletic club, a very successful team, largely local, although not exclusive, between 1914 and 1926. And then from thereafter, we have minor pro here until, of course, the North Stars come along in 1967.
Yeah, and the rest is modern history. Thanks for that look back 100 years or so. And kind of a coincidence, both as you say, British Columbia and Minnesota took to hockey within the same month. Is that?
Well, within a month of each other, yeah, from what I've been able to determine. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that we didn't have some hockey prior to February 18th of 1895, but it's not recorded in any depth, let's put it that way, okay? And the BC thing, they had a first recorded game in January of 1895. So I like to tell Canadians that in the terms of hockey, we're like the 11th province.
Yeah, I like that. I'm Dave Terstig. We're talking with Roger Godin. He's the curator for the Minnesota Wild, NHL's team, and out of XL Energy Center. Roger, do you work year-round then? Are you still busy during this, what's now the unfortunate off-season for the Wild?
Yes, because it is a year-round kind of thing, because you have to plan and gather information to update existing exhibits, and then come up with thoughts of new and original things. And so I'm basically on my own, and that's very workable. But because I am in that status, you do have to start early in terms of planning and then writing text for the exhibits and acquiring artifacts needed, or frequently it's not so much actual artifacts, but reproductions of jerseys and that kind of thing. You have to place the orders for those and determine what those color schemes might be. So it's quite a bit of nitty-gritty that goes with it, and then it comes to fruition in the September-October time frame when we begin the new season.
Sure. Is the XL Energy Center open for general, non-game days for folks to see your work?
It is, in the sense that if somebody wanted a tour, I'm more than happy to do it. In terms of just walking in, no, not on that basis. But on a scheduled tour basis, it's certainly open. I'm always happy to take people through.
Sure. Well, that's always nice. And here's something from our very own Matthew Brown. I know you guys had a chance to connect for that Capitals game in March, or was it? Yeah, March, end of March.
Yeah, it was March.
What a game. And he was just curious if you have any insight on Gump Worsley of the North Stars. Apparently the last goaltender to not wear a mask. Tell us about old Gump.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he's no longer with us. So I don't know whether Matt is aware of that or not. But he passed on some time ago. I'm originally from New York State, and of course he spent some time there, you know, playing for the Rangers, and he was always a fan favorite, and then of course ultimately comes to Minnesota, and he's part of the North Stars. Was not a great believer, I understand, and keeping in let's say tip shop shape, and in fact was known to smoke between periods of games he was playing in, which is something that seems like heresy today.
Yes, those were different days. And no mask? Is how can you play hockey without a protective equipment? Just briefly touch on sort of the evolution of the equipment and the safety equipment.
Well, I think you got to, again, put that in context. You know, we really didn't have the slap shot develop into a significant hockey weapon until the late 50s and early 60s, okay? And that's when Worsley's playing, although he played beyond that as well. So that, you know, the need for it probably wasn't quite there, but as the game becomes faster and the slap shot and then ultimately the curved stick comes into play, you know, it's obvious it becomes necessary to have some protection for goaltenders, and now the idea of somebody playing without one is absolutely unheard of. In the more modern era, which I'm citing would be after World War II, Jacques Plante was the one who decided that it was a good idea to have a mask, although there were evidence of earlier use of masks, but never on any, you know, consistent basis in the years before World War II. A guy named Clint Benedict, for instance, is, if reading hockey history, his name comes up, and you'll, as somebody who wore an early mask, although he didn't stay with it.
So the evolution of the stick perhaps pushed everything forward.
I think, and the shot, you know, the nature of the slap shot, where the speed of the puck, you know, was far more intense than it had been in the past. So,
and
obviously,
so what's
playing
a, modern,
a role in this.
So what's a modern slap shot speed for those that are listening and wouldn't know?
Oh, I guess off the top of my head, it's got to be in the upper 80s, 90s
miles
per range.
That's, yeah.
For sure. So that's a lot of speed, all boiled down to a piece of vulcanized rubber that can do a lot of damage if you are not adequately protected.
Yeah, well, that's why it's the fastest game on ice.
Right.
Well, Roger, time flies when you're enjoying your favorite pastime and a curator, a legend in your own right. And here's our final question. The Wild are out. Who's left? Who do you like? You got any picks?
Well, I have sympathies. Let me put it that way. Okay. being originally from New York, I grew up with the Rangers, and amazingly enough, you know, they actually train in my hometown in Westchester County, New York, which is the county north of New York City, in a town called Tarrytown. I could have never dreamed of that as a kid. So, you know, beyond the Wild, I have that kind of you know, sympathy. So, and you know, they've come back now and make it 2-2. And I'm hoping, of course, that they can go all the way, but I'm not, I guess, super optimistic that that'll happen. My other sympathies are with the Blues. I realize they eliminated us, but, of course, our former coach went down there and turned things around for them. And, you know, the Wild situation aside, I think those of us who had contact with Mike found him to be a really great human being, and we wish all the best for him.
Ah, that's very sporting of you. Very good. Roger Godin of the Minnesota Wild, and I really appreciate your time here on the Roadhouse, and look forward to next season's Wild hockey. You said starts in October. When's the schedule come out?
Early July is normally when the schedule comes out, and without the Olympic participation, hopefully things will be spread out a little bit more, where they were so compact this past year because of the World Cup of Hockey had played a role in that, and of course the Olympics will not play into it this year. So I think you could make a case that we'd be far better off if we played 72 games instead of 82, and wrap things up sort of by the end of May. But of course, everybody would have to take less, and we know that's not going to happen. So that's a pipe dream.
Well, I can hardly wait till October. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks. I appreciate being with you.